When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
What did you make of the opening statement from Bears head coach Matt Eberflus made in his media conference on Monday afternoon?
After watching the tape from yesterday, very pleased with the effort and the way the team finished. Didn't get it done at the end, but putting ourselves in a position to win the game at the very end, 2 weeks in a row. So that's grit, determination, working together. To be able to get that done, and now we just got to finish better.
Is this guy playing horseshoes?
Well, he's not playing chess, and it doesn't sound like he's playing professional football, because the only thing that matters in the NFL is the result. I mean, listen, God bless him. They got to move on. He's got to keep the team together. I understand why he would open the news conference that way, but boy, did that ring hollow. It's just the tone of it was just kind of, it's like after the game when he came out, he was proud of the guys. I mean, I don't know what that would be like to lose in the fashion in which you lost and then be told that the guy's proud of you. I don't know that that generates, oh, wow, the coach just says the right thing all the time. Or if it's like, how soft is that? I don't know. I don't want to pick on him because he's got enough bad things going on. I think he's having a rough time of it, but this is just more grease on the wheel that is going to run him down, the karmic wheel that you just can't get past in the NFL. You said it's a win business. All that matters is winning, and it's a very cutthroat business, and he's too nice a guy.
He, Eberflus, is in a no-win situation, yeah. Pun intended. So they did make a comeback, but then his defense couldn't get the job done. So they did do that. I mean, do the Bears and does Matt Eberflus deserve any credit for being involved in 23 one-score games since he's been here? They're not getting blown out, typically. Does that matter? And he's right. I mean, the last thing on that cut, now we've just got to fit. They don't finish. It's the old coffees for closers. They do not finish the job. They drag you back in. We had a lot of fun yesterday hearing callers, texters, talking about, leaving the game, finding out that overtime was happening, all this kind of stuff. But the quarterback, listen, the quarterback has played better in the 2 weeks, and he played better on Sunday than he played in the game the week prior. So this could be the good news, bad news. It's going to be bad news for Matt Eberflus. As long, and you guys brought this up in the first segment, I didn't jump in because I thought I'd save it for this portion. As long as Caleb plays good against the Lions, I think everybody's dressing or stuffing or whatever you call it's going to taste really good.
Okay.
I don't think it matters. The wins and losses don't matter.
Really?
They don't, because now they're not making if they won out, Mully, they're not making the playoffs. If they won every game, they're still not going to make the playoffs. Right now, it's about the health and the
true.
Improvement of the quarterback, which is what it should have been about the whole year. Let's go get him. Let's go get him the best offensive tackle you can, and let's keep him healthy and keep him improving.
I don't agree with that. We'll get to that later. Not of course not. I just think that the season always was about making a run to a playoff spot, and
I agree. And but now we're 4-7, though, okay. David. That's why we have to turn the page.
But back to the question: if you're Matt Eberflus, I understand, because he's an easy target, that when he talks, people will pounce, and that's certainly their prerogative. Everybody wants him to sound as outraged as they feel. They feel betrayed by the Bears, and there's that anger and rage almost within, or there's like this feeling like you need to sound as ticked off as I feel at you. And he's never going to meet that standard. So he's always going to be there to mock. And people take their shots and people will pile on. That's fine. Evaluating him by his words, he's never going to measure up. This isn't the most eloquent coach in the NFL. This isn't even the most eloquent coach that the Bears have probably in the building. He struggles at this part of the job. What he's trying to do is trying to keep his team. He's got six more games in his head. He's a football coach, the football coachiest of football coaches. So all he thinks about is the next practice, which is leading him to the next game. And he compartmentalizes. And that's why he sounds the way he sounds. He's going to try to get the best out of the situation. You don't have to do a lot of mental gymnastics to look at the Bears and think they could be 7-4 as easily as they are 4-7. They're not, because he makes a lot of mistakes in big games in terms of big game decisions. He doesn't make those very well. But he's not going to sit there and own that every single press conference. So he says the things like, all right.
Very pleased.
Effort. Very pleased. We can't finish. He says those things, and he probably should avoid that, but he's not getting a lot of advice on how to handle the public portion of the job. If he were getting good advice, if he were getting any advice, it'd be more obvious by now. So he sounds like a football coach talking about grit, determination, and trying to keep his team on track.
You know what it sounds like?
It's unacceptable, yeah. Probably, but it's not surprising.
It sounds like an attaboy.
There are no attaboys at Halsall.
That's a good question.
Thomas Brown said.
Voice of Coach Dave Juan said he's here at 7:40 for a couple of segments. What does your gut say about the Bears' next move if they lose in convincing fashion to the Lions on Thanksgiving Day? Are there any more staff moves Matt Eberflus could make?
I think if they lose on Thursday, there's a chance that they will shock us and fire him on Friday. I don't expect that to happen if you're talking about a gut reaction. Your gut reaction is the Bears are the Bears, and things move slower at House Hall. The pace of life tends to slow down to a snail's pace, especially when it comes to personnel decisions. Surprising that they fired the offensive coordinator? Yes. Head coach is a different story. The McCaskies probably don't want to be the first to do something, this regime. I don't think George McCaskey would want to get involved, and he's not been as involved from what people are saying. And that probably means they keep him. If they don't fire him Friday, I don't think they fire him before the season is over. I think if he keeps his job beyond this next weekend after what I expect to be a pretty embarrassing loss on Thanksgiving Day, they'll probably just let him ride it out, because there will be five tough games left. It's hard to envision a win on the schedule. Dustin might end up being right about this all along, but gut says they probably keep him even if they lose. And if they keep him, they probably will just ride this out, because that's what the Bears do.
Well, if there is another special teams snafu, Richard Hightower might be showing the door, just trying to wake people up. Not his fault. I thought the line of questioning was out of control yesterday with the media and Coach Eberflus about not, paying enough attention to this. But here's what I didn't get a chance to do yesterday. Maybe you guys rewatch the game as a form of punishment. But I actually wanted to go back and watch all the field goal attempts. Again, they made some long field goals, right? I mean, just over Sunday's game, right? Was Pryor in there the whole time? And if he was, like, shame on them. Like
he was to start the game.
Right. He was on the one that got blocked. Did he continue? Did they make that adjustment?
They made the adjustment.
So he was taken out.
Yeah.
Okay. So they didn't get another Tevin field goal block the rest of the way.
Was it Tevin they brought in? Yes.
I'm not sure.
They might have brought in the tackle and moved him.
Oh, Braxton Jones.
Yes. I think it was Braxton.
Wow, Braxton. Okay. I'm saying, so I think that's important. Especially
Justin, they had a field goal blocked. They did nothing about it. And then they responded after a second field goal was blocked.
That's my point.
And three have been blocked this year. So, I don't know why you're congratulating them.
No.
They noticed after the next block.
That's why I think the special teams coach can get fired, is my point. But I am glad that finally, and now here's I really have an issue with some of the questioning up there. And this is one of them, because you just confirmed what I just asked. And I think that's important. Instead, well, was it addressed? Why wasn't it addressed more? How many snaps were paid? I mean, on and on and on. They did. And whose decision was it? When that happened, did Matt Eberflus say, listen, Richard, next man up, Pryor's done. No more Pryor on special teams. And if that's what happened, good. They at least did something and didn't let it continue.
Wait, now I'm thinking about it. We got to ask Biggs about that because I can't remember what I wrote down on my notes after they...
You might have to go through it in here. I'm just curious. Is I believe Pryor was the one in there when it got blocked, and did they make an adjustment?
Wasn't Larry Borum, because he was one of the guys that didn't play.
Right. Look, I you know, like, what could be weaker than after you fire your offensive coordinator, you lose three more games, and then you fire your special teams coordinator? Like, at some point, and you're right, David, you got to get to the final solution here. You got to get to the real problem that is coming probably at the end of the year, just because the Bears they're proud of the fact that they don't fire a coach in season, and they feel that that is, you know, if you come to Chicago, we're going to give you enough time to show how good a coach you are. Now, that's changed a little bit under George, and they moved quicker on some of these guys than they have in the past. But their timing is awful weird. I don't know. I think that Matt Eberflus could be fired if they lose this game, and the question is if they lose it badly. And if they have a really lopsided loss, that's conceivable. I think the problem you're left with is who's going to do it. But, you know, when you hear some of the noise coming out of there, I think there's a lot of different possibilities. I think he keeps his job. I don't think they fire him, win or lose. I don't think they're going to win. So I don't know how they're going to win. This is the hottest team in football. You know, you can say Kansas City's had a great year, but they've had 8-1 score wins. They're just a great winning team, and they got a great player who can make plays at the end of games to win games, and it makes them about as dangerous as you can be. But when you start lining up the teams that you think are really going somewhere, the Lions are probably number one. They're probably right now, the Eagles look awful good because they went out and they spent on a running back. How about that? And that guy's having an insane year. I think we were talking about Derrick Henry a couple weeks ago about what the great year he's having and how he's helped, and could he be an MVP candidate? Well, there's your MVP candidate, is Barkley. I mean, he's just been
sick. One or
Barkley
the other.
Has been phenomenal, and he's a couple hundred yards ahead of him now.
Those two guys could be the front runner.
So, I mean, it'll go to a quarterback. But it could be Lamar, to be honest with you, after last night again.
MB3.
We'll see. We'll see. I'm very interested in what Olin told us yesterday. The Bears, their offensive coordinator on the road. What are they going to get done against this defense on the road? Should be, you know, the offensive line plays better at home than on the road, so it should be really interesting.
There are a bunch of question marks over the head of this offense.
Voice of Jared Payton, he's here at 9. Who on the Bears defense is having a good year? Who on the Bears offense is having a good year? And if it's hard to name players who are having good seasons, how fair is it to pin the season on the coaching staff?
It's a great question. You know, when you go into a 5-game tailspin, no one's having a good year, right? I mean, I think that we've talked about Montez Sweat as the best player on the defense, or is it Jalen Johnson? You know, we probably should talk about what Jalen had to say yesterday. He couldn't understand how he got those penalties. I thought both those penalties were penalties. I mean, I don't understand how you can come away from that.
He was grabbing cloth.
He said, well, I did grab him for a minute, but it didn't change his...
If you grab him for a minute. Yeah,
the official standing there.
I was only going 75 for at least 10 seconds.
I know.
Officer.
I
digress. I'm sorry.
I know. But I'm merely saying that this is really, it's difficult. Those are your two best players. They're not having good seasons. We think that DJ Moore might be their best player on offense, not having a great season. Who's having a good season? Who's having a good season? It's like a mystery wrapped in an enigma. You lose 5 games in a row. The punter's pretty good.
Troy Taylor?
The punter's pretty good for a rookie punter. He hasn't been perfect, but he's having as good a season as anybody, and he's a rookie. You envision him getting better. But I'm befuddled by this question. The linebackers aren't playing great. You know, the secondary's been banged up. The offensive line doesn't have anyone. The defensive line doesn't have anyone who jumps out at you. I think Kyler Gordon's probably having a pretty good year. I've seen him make some plays, but he's also been banged up. And it's just, it's, you're scratching your head with this question. Cole Kmet, when they throw him the ball, looks pretty good. Doesn't block that great.
But it doesn't block that great.
Good podcast.
Right? You know, doesn't always catch the
great
ball podcast when it hits him in the hands. Good is such a good on whose measuring stick, right? I mean, you know, good.
Yours.
DJ Moore's had, and not because he's our guy, DJ Moore's had a good year. But not by
his own standards.
Not by his own standards. But again, he with the new offensive coordinator, they're going to him more, yes, right? I mean, Jalen Johnson's had a good year, but not a great year, DJ Moore and Jalen Johnson are not having years equal to the contracts that they've both gotten from the Bears. Okay, you can name a guy, and I can give you.
I agree.
Is it Poles?
Kind of the point.
Should Poles be? I mean, it's going to be hard to make this roster. Really?
Doesn't look like it.
It's going to be hard to make this roster.
This roster may be.
Your roster is average.
Without any Pro Bowl players.
Zero.
And think about that. There's really not anybody that you could point to and say, oh, yeah, he's having a good year. DeAndre Swift, he may have the numbers. He may have 1,000
yards. He's improved,
but he started slow. He may be the best candidate. I think you look at the offensive line, there are no candidates for good seasons there. The receiving core has been a colossal disappointment based on expectations. The quarterback is on the verge of having a good year. He's going to finish. If he finishes strong, he could. Defensively, that defense has been disappointing. Jervon Dexter started well. Montez Sweat had his first sack in a month.
Yeah.
Since he got paid, he's been different. Linebackers, let's not talk about the linebackers. Maybe TJ Edwards.
Montez Sweat is having the best pressure rate of his career. I'm just saying.
He's not getting home.
They didn't get him any help. I mean,
it's like a power hitter that's getting doubles and singles.
That's very true.
I'm just saying, you know, warning track power.
I don't think I can defend anyone.
I don't think either, but TJ Edwards might be having the best season of any defensive player, and yet he was involved in the yes, pass coverage the other day that Jordan Addison got loose and they picked him apart. So this is a tough question because the roster is flawed.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
How much of a problem will the Bears have with Detroit's running game, especially the combo of Montgomery and Gibbs? Can you believe they are the only set of running backs to each run 10-plus TDs in their first 11 games since Green Bay's Horning and Taylor back in 60? Wow. What does this game mean more to, Montgomery or DeAndre Swift?
Well, that's a great statistic. It's crazy to think that it's been that long. DeAndre Swift may feel like he's got something to prove to the Lions, but David Montgomery takes the field every time, every game, like he's got something to prove to somebody. So my feeling is his sense of purpose and passion will be greater than anybody's on the field who will carry the ball on Thursday. He runs angry. Against the Bears, he runs angrier. So it's David Montgomery.
The only problem with David Montgomery is, Mully, and you love this stuff, yesterday's initial injury report.
Yeah.
David Montgomery not able to take the field.
Yeah.
Not able to go through a walkthrough.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I agree with everything David said. Yeah. I think, you know, in his heart of hearts, the guy who wants to show somebody something. But again, Matt Nagy's not here anymore, and he's the one who called him chubby or whatever and thought he was out of shape. But it would be David Montgomery. But maybe David Montgomery. And again, you know, the Lions may want to rest David Montgomery. In as much as he wants to play in this game, they probably don't need David Montgomery on Sunday. You can't sit both guys, but you might not need him, and you're going to need David Montgomery when it matters. And that's, unfortunately, it's not going to really matter on Thursday.
You know, I mean, it's a crazy statistic that you got. I remember my father used to talk about Jim Taylor. He thought Jim Taylor was a phenomenal player back in the day. Never saw him And Paul Hornung, I only know from reputation, really, and his personality and some of the, you know, post-career stuff. But I got to tell you, DeAndre Swift is a team removed from the Lions, right? And he's kind of one. I would think that it's not him. He's not the one that has something to prove. And you're right about David Montgomery. He always plays like that. I think Montgomery's going to play, according to the stuff I was reading and listening to. There are a few other players that are in worse shape than him. And, you know, running backs on Mondays, you take a beating at that position. And I think they got a couple of really good ones. So I think the Bears are in trouble with the run game. And I think that statistic underscores it.
Different question on a different topic.
Mike Florio, he's here at 844 to take us around the NFL. What do you think about Lonzo Ball traveling with the Bulls now? What was the biggest takeaway from their two games over the weekend? One good win, one embarrassing loss.
Yeah, I heard Billy say yesterday that he was asked if they're working on their defensive problems, and he said every day they're working on their defensive problems, and I'm sure he is. And that was the problem. They lost. They gave the Grizzlies 142 points. They give up a lot of points, man. And when they give up over 140, they got a hard time winning. So that's what happened there. I like the idea that Lonzo is back traveling on this two-game set. I hope he plays, and I hope he helps, and I hope his wrist is fine, and I hope his knee feels good, and I'd like to see the guy back. I think it'd be fun to see him play tonight. Are they in the NBA Cup tonight?
Yes.
Yeah, so we'll get like
can't wait to see what the Wizards court looks like.
We'll get a really ugly floor.
I want to see it. Can't wait.
Yeah.
Red, white, and blue, baby, right?
Oh, yeah.
Nation's capital. They're on. This is a game. If the Bulls aren't going to win this game, they're not going to get anywhere near 30 wins. All right? Lonzo Ball said this is a 30-win team.
No, he said 40. 40. He said 40.
Did he say 40?
Yeah.
Okay. They might not get near 30. Okay. This is a – if you're going to put a win on your tally sheet, this is one you got to get. They're actually favored tonight by 4.5, according to our guys over at Circus Sports Illinois. They live and die by the three. Bottom line, this is now a team that either lives and dies by the three. Io was in the starting lineup against the Hawks, had a nice night, and then they gave up 5,000 points, it felt like, in that loss.
Scottie Pippen Jr.
Kind of cool story,
that
right?
That was cool.
Yeah.
And now his dad's in the fashion business now. So no more bourbon. Now he's designing clothes.
I think the Bulls give up more points than any team in the league. They're last in defense, 123.9 points per game. They're dead 30th right there. So I also wonder how much of that is related to the pace at which they chose to play. When you have more possessions, you give more possessions. When you shoot more threes, the ball is going to be flying back and forth. So they're scoring more. They're playing their way. But the problem with that is that they're giving the other opponent more times to beat them off the dribble. And they can't stop anybody off the dribble. So they need to toughen up defensively. And I don't know if that's feasible given the pace at which they play. The takeaways from over the weekend, besides the Scottie Pippen nice story on Saturday, little nostalgia nod, but Matas Buzelis had a game against the Hawks. And he had a career-high 14, and he finished with authority. And he's getting more time with Patrick Williams out. And this doesn't have to be a season that where he doesn't see time with the NBA team. He doesn't have to spend it in the G League. And his emergence over the weekend was an encouraging sign.
He's confident.
And Lonzo Ball, when he's in uniform, instead of wearing really cool clothes on the bench, I'll be interested.
You know how you lose a lot of advantage with your defense is when you trade your best defensive player for Josh Giddey.
You know how? That's a great question.
There he is, Brett Bielema. He'll be here with you guys. 9:25, big game at Wrigley this weekend against the Northwestern Wildcats. How do you expect the College Football Selection Committee rankings to reflect the notable upsets of SEC powers, Alabama and Ole Miss, and other various
machinations?
Thank you. Over the weekend. What in the world is that word? Where will Indiana be ranked? machinations?
I think Indiana will be ranked in the top 12. They will get a spot at the table. And I think tonight's outcry will come from various campuses in the SEC, where like, oh, we have three losses and we're on the outside looking in. Yeah, you do. It's a new day. It's a new era. It's a new format. Get used to it. You're not that good this year, SEC. Sorry, the Big Ten is better. And now you're going to have to just look at that reality. The Big Ten is better this year, Dustin. They have more teams in the top 12. So I think that, yeah, you're going to look at the tape and say, well, yeah, you know what? Alabama could be the – stop. Stop.
So machinations is a noun. It's a plot or a scheme.
We're,
well, for the rest of us out there. The rest of us, not journalism / English majors.
Well, okay. I don't.
Machinations.
I don't think that's not a difficult word, frankly.
Never seen that word in my life. Public school educated and proud of it. Go District 205. Alabama would be, well, we could ask Joe O or we could ask Joe Fortenbaugh this tomorrow. Alabama on a neutral field would be at least a 9-point favorite against Indiana.
I so don't care about that.
I said that. That's exactly
I don't care about that. That doesn't matter.
David, how many times would Indiana beat Alabama?
I don't care.
Well, okay, but that's again.
That's not the question.
Bad brand
Read
of
the question
college football.
And pronounce it correctly. The question is the question. That doesn't matter if Alabama would beat Indiana. That's not the thing.
It was said correctly because Molly said it. It stopped me cold, as Molly would say.
Stop with the SEC stuff, man.
SEC
Indiana
is not,
lost once to the second-ranked team in America.
The only ranked team they played all year, David.
On the road.
You Paul Feinbaum?
Only ranked team they played all year.
That's what I Feinbaum is basically, that's what he's making that noise, Dustin, and that's why there's all this intrigue going on because the SEC realizes that two of their teams went on the road, and you go to Oklahoma, unrated Oklahoma, and you score 6 points.
That's an awful loss. It is horrifically bad.
It's,
agreed 100%.
It's a terrible loss. It's a terrible loss at a terrible time, and now you've got three of them, and this is where all the intrigue is. I got a feeling they're shutting them out. I don't think Ole Miss going to Florida. Florida's been playing better, but Billy Napier looks like he's fired. Okay?
He's so fired.
And I mean, to have gone to that down there and lost that game, I get it. They're in the swamp, but these are none. These are away games to unranked teams, bud. At you know, the penultimate week of the season, or I guess now we're at the penultimate week. It is just really difficult to have a loss like that in this time and think that you're not going to get slapped down by the College Football Playoff Committee. And it doesn't matter, as David is saying, what the line would be, who would be favored. It doesn't matter because they have, for the most part, taken care of their business. Indiana's beaten a lot of good teams. They did very well against common opponents with Ohio State. They didn't beat Ohio State. They went into the horseshoe and they got stuffed. Did anyone think that was going to go differently? And I mean, like, if Notre Dame loses to USC this weekend, are you going to argue that they belong in the playoff? No.
No.
Because you have bad losses. And some years your schedule might look tougher and it won't be tough because the teams you're playing are. But it looks to me like I'm looking forward to tonight because I don't know how the committee does anything other than shut out the SEC.
And please let Mr. Feinbaum over there know that there are four Big Ten teams in the top 10
yes.
and there are three SEC schools.
Right.
So I submit that for.
And I think when did Penn State and Indiana play? Oh, that's right. They didn't.
You play
Maybe
the schedule.
Play in the playoff.
Yeah.
Actually, they could play in the playoff. We'll find
Imagine
out
if Georgia loses to Texas.
Just start speaking with a Southern
in
accent.
In the SEC title just game, and now SEC. Georgia gets kicked out of this thing.
Well,
Georgia's worse than Indiana? Give me a break.
But
if
here's
they
the
lose.
Thing. Yeah, if they, like, again, it's not just losing. It's the time of year in which you lose, man.
Give me a break.
If Notre Dame was undefeated and lost in Northern Illinois instead of then, now, they'd be in trouble too. That's just how life is, man. I mean, there's you lose, like, what if Ohio State beats Oregon in the Big Ten title game, provided they beat Michigan. Wouldn't that be
they're both still in.
Well, I know they're both still in, but I'm saying, wouldn't that make them the one with the bye, and wouldn't Oregon then go on the road? I'm just, because they'd be
we'll
Big Ten champs.
Later.
All right, well, it's good. It's going to be fun to see. That's all. All right, we've got the extra point next. It's Mully and Hall on the Score.
Machinations.
Frankly.
Never seen that word in my life. Public school educated and proud of it. Go District 205.